Paul doesn't say anywhere that we are going to stop sinning. He doesn't have to. All he has to say is this in 1 Corinthians 15:53, "For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal put on immortality." It must, and it will. This mortal must put on immortality. Once you say that, you've said it all, because without mortality, there is no sin. As I told you yesterday, mortality is the petri dish where sin flourishes. Death is passed through into all humanity, on which all sin. We sin because we are mortal. We're not mortal because we sin. Therefore, if you take away mortality, then it goes without saying, and Paul doesn't even bother to say it. Without mortality, there is no sin. Mortality, again, is the breeding ground for sin. Once you've eliminated that, you're completely incapable of sinning. Now, whenever this corruptible should be putting on incorruption and this mortal should be putting on immortality, then shall come to pass the word which is written, swallowed up was death by victory. Where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? The victory that death has over us now will be eliminated. Swallowed up is death. Death is our enemy. I hate death. I could not go back to that cemetery today. I am looking to be made immortal at any moment now. Our bodies are going to be changed. 1 Corinthians 15:51, "Lo, a secret to you am I telling, we all shall not be put to repose, yet we all shall be changed in an instant, in the casting of an eye, at the last trump. For he will be trumpeting, and the dead will be roused incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal put on immortality." Immortality is the inability to die. It's the best word in the Greek scriptures. The word is athanatos. It means undeath. Immortality is no death, undeath. It's not death. It's everything that death isn't. It is incapable of ever dying again, and it will never corrupt. It is incorruptible. This is why Paul puts the word incorruption with immortality, because the two go hand in hand. If you say incorruption, if you say immortality, it's practically stupid to say, and you won't sin again, because, again, sin is impossible for an incorruptible, immortal human being. And I want to say this about humanity, is that people ask me, what are we going to be when we're changed? What are we going to look like? I'm going to give you a clue today. But I will say that we will still be human beings. This is why Ephesians 2:15, that he should be creating the two, that is the Jews and the Greeks, in himself into one new humanity, making peace, and should be reconciling both in one body to God through the cross, killing the enmity in it. All enmity killed and death swallowed up. If this is something that interests you, if it's something that takes over your thinking, then that's good. Because it's so big and it's so violent of a change, so clashing of a change, so different than what we're experiencing now, that the change from corruptible to incorruption and from mortality to immortality is going to be such that no human now can put it into words. And that's why I can't even pretend to explain it. I can explain it, but I can't even pretend to describe what it's going to feel like. But the point in Ephesians 2:15 is that he's making the two into a new humanity, a new humanity. It's not a destruction of humanity. Humanity's not destroyed. We're still human beings, but we are new human beings. It's a new humanity. We are acquainted with no other humanity except the old humanity. We are living in the old humanity. We know that our old humanity was crucified. We learned that in Romans chapter 6. Our old humanity was crucified with Christ. This verse in Ephesians 2 gives us news subsequent to the truth of the death of the old humanity. If the old humanity dies, what do we have? Well, we have a new humanity. Well, Martin Zender, what's the difference between the old humanity and the new humanity? The difference between corruption and incorruption, and the difference between mortal and immortality. I told you yesterday that this mortality is coursing through our veins. It infects everything we do. That's why you can't be too hard on yourself, because you are dying, and you were born dying. As soon as that fruit was plucked by our forebears, it's a great analogy, actually, when you eat from the tree that was prohibited in the Garden of Eden, as soon as, and we see it today, all these thousands of years later, when you pluck a piece of fruit, it begins to die immediately. And so we are born dying. It's like, how you doing today? I'm dying. And it's not a beautiful process. So I always call myself a realist. I'm a realist concerning death. The first horror is realizing what it is. And only then can you be primed for the thrill of this being made immortal. And it doesn't happen by slow process. That's the thing. It doesn't happen by gradual education. It doesn't happen by getting used to it, like you would put your toe in a swimming pool, test the waters. Let me read this again. Lo, a secret to you I am telling, we all indeed shall not be put to repose, but we shall all be changed in an instant, in the casting of an eye, at the last trump. In an instant. Changed in an instant. That Greek word is atomos. It is the Greek, the English elements are uncut. Atomos, A is not. Tamos is cut, not cut. It's such a small time period, like an atom, you can't cut. But an atom, you can cut. We can split the atom. So an atom is not even the smallest particle of matter. So this instant is, we speak of things like nanoseconds, but this is uncut. It's not even atomic. It's not even an atomic time segment. I propose to you that it can't be measured, and it's never been measured. And this will be the first time it will ever have happened. And it's going to bring about a new humanity. What will that humanity look like? Well, I can give you an idea. Paul asks the question in 1 Corinthians 15:25, someone will be protesting, how are the dead being roused? Now with what body are they coming? What you are sowing is not being vivified if it should not be dying. I told you yesterday that dying was the prerequisite for living, that being mortal is the prerequisite for immortality. This mortal must put on immortality. And Paul compares it to sowing. This is the simplest example in the scripture, and it makes me realize why there are things that grow from seeds. This is why. The whole seed thing, you plant a seed in the ground, and it becomes this magnificent, different thing. This began in Eden when God created. So that Paul could have this example. So that we could understand the principle of no dying, no resurrection, no mortality, no immortality, no corruption, no incorruption. What you are sowing is not being vivified if it should not be dying. We know that there's a generation that will not die. This is why the importance of the word dying. It's dying. Some of us, we're all dying. Some of us will not taste death. I don't believe any of us will taste death. The Lord is coming for us soon. But the analogy still fits. It's a seed. And what you are sowing, you are not sowing the body which shall come to be, but a naked kernel, perchance of wheat, or some of the rest, or any other thing that grows from a seed. Yet God is giving it a body according as He wills, and to each of the seeds its own body. Each seed has its own body, but it must be planted. A seed is a humble, small, hard, insignificant looking thing. And then not one farmer or not one gardener on this planet understands how something that looks like this, and I've been saving this package of wildflower seeds for this demonstration. I haven't even opened it yet. I bought this months ago thinking I was going to do this months ago, but I didn't. But I'm going to show you what wildflower seeds look. This is not a movie, okay? This is so fantastic that you would think that what I'm going to do now is some science fiction thing. I'm going to show you what these seeds look like. I haven't even seen them myself. I'm pouring them in my hand. Look at this. Look at this. These are wildflower seeds. You see these things? They're small, dark, hard. I can't hardly even get one in my fingers to show it to you. You see that? That's a seed. Do you know what these things become? If you put these things in, this is not science fiction. This actually happens every day, and we forget the miracle of it, and we forget this picture in 1 Corinthians. Look what these things, look what happened. Look. These are wildflowers. You put those seeds in the ground, and they become these impossibly beautiful, colorful, intricate, unbelievable flowers. From this turns into this. This turns into this. And if I had it, I could show you a seed that turns into an oak tree. I could show you a seed that turns into a banana tree, or a cactus, or a palm tree. I'm surrounded by trees here, and they all started with something like this. This is the divinely proposed example of how we are going to be transformed. And Paul, under the inspiration of Holy Spirit, thinks of this. He thinks of a seed, which is here. And he thinks of putting it in the ground. The whole analogy of sowing. And many human bodies go into the ground. The human body is composed of soil. And the human body is planted in the ground. Well, that's a coincidence. No, it's not a coincidence that God used agriculture and used this ridiculous looking small thing to produce this. Now let me read on here. That gives us a clue as to what our bodies are going to do. Only the growing season here, you got a little map back here about where these things grow in different parts of the United States. If I plant this thing, it's going to be a while before I get wildflowers. The transformation I'm talking about that we're on the brink of is going to be instantaneous. We're going to go from a seed to an oak tree. We're going to go from a tiny little seed to a wildflower. And it's going to happen instantly. Now I'm going to read again. 1 Corinthians chapter 15. That which you are sowing, you are not sowing the body which shall come. When you put this seed in the ground, you're not sowing the thing that's going to come. This thing isn't going to spring up and look like it does now. You're not sowing the body which will come. And Paul calls it a naked kernel. What do you go out of this world with? The same thing you came into it with. Nothing. Nothing. You're stripped of everything. At death, you're stripped of everything. You got nothing in it. You don't have anything anymore. And it's shoved into the ground, and it's dead. But there's something inside, in spite of the ugliness, in spite of the death, in spite of our mortality, there's something inside of us. Just like there's something inside of this seed. I don't know what the hell it is. It's a miracle. There's something inside of it that when you put it in the ground and forget about it, it turns into this. All right, we put human beings in the ground or in tombs, and the flesh goes to hell. It rots. It does go to hell, actually. It just disappears. It disappears. And Paul uses the example of wheat. I could use the example of wheat. A seed of this, like this, turns into a stalk of wheat that's beautiful. If you just looked at it and studied it, or an ear of corn, just study it. It's a miracle of symmetry, a miracle of life. And then you eat it. It provides life. It gives life. We're dead apart from the stuff that grows from these little seeds. We're dead apart from this. Everything that lives feeds on herbage. Where does that come from? From seeds. The whole thing's an analogy. That's all it's meant. It's meant for, well, it's not all it's meant for, but it's the biggest purpose of that seed and these flowers is an analogy to comfort us concerning our own bodies. Paul says your body is like a seed. Or to use the metaphor, your body is a seed. Yet God is giving it a body according as he wills. And Paul uses the example of wheat or some of the rest. You could use anything. You could use a pine tree, a palm tree, a cactus, a wildflower, a rose. The flowers have different varieties of flowers, different varieties of trees, different varieties of fruits, of vegetables, of grasses. There's different kinds of wheat. And to each of the seeds has its own body. And the seeds, the body that comes is according to the seed. This seed, whatever, it's a wildflower seed. I guarantee you, you plant this thing, you will not get a palm tree. You will not grow a banana from this particular seed. This seed will not produce a cactus or a stalk of wheat. It's going to produce this, and that's a law of God, each according to its kind. Now, all flesh is not the same flesh, verse 39, but there is one indeed of humans, yet another flesh of beasts, yet another flesh of flyers, another of fish. So even among the souls, the living things that venture around, There are different kinds. There are fish, there are fowls, there are human beings, there are animals. Just like there are tulips, there are roses, there are palm trees, there are cactus, there are apple trees. Paul goes on, there are bodies celestial as well as bodies terrestrial. This means that our bodies, when they are made immortal, will be different than the bodies of the Israel saints on earth. They have terrestrial bodies. The body that Jesus came back in after his resurrection was a terrestrial body. It had no blood. It was flesh and bone. And this is the body that Israel will come back in. It's a body suited to the earth, to the terrestrial sphere. Yet Paul says there are bodies celestial as well. And for that, we look to our resurrected Lord who appeared to Saul on the road to Damascus in a body that was so glorious, that was so not the seed that was sown, that it blinded Saul. There are bodies celestial as well as bodies terrestrial, but a different glory indeed is that of the celestial, yet a different of the terrestrial, different glory. Israel saints, when they're resurrected in a terrestrial body, they have a different glory than a celestial body, the body we will have. Ours is a greater glory. Doesn't mean we're better, it just means we're different. Now Paul is going to focus in on the celestial bodies, and he's going to say this. And he's using the actual, the celestial bodies that we see from the vantage point of earth. He's talking about things like the sun and the moon and the stars. And here he goes. There's one glory of the sun, another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars. Now he's going to focus on the stars. And he says, star is excelling star in glory. So Paul is opening subcategories. He's opening subfolders. He's double clicking on the celestial bodies. And he says, we have the sun and the moon and the stars. Now he's double clicking on the stars. And he says, stars differs from glory. We see the multifarious wisdom of God in the multifarious nature of creation. Whether you're looking at the animal creation, the variation is mind-boggling. Even the plants, the variation is mind-boggling. Somebody told me there's over 100 kinds of palm trees. I thought a palm tree was a palm tree. No, there's hundreds, maybe more, of palm trees. Thus also is the celestial. And then when we're talking about stars, even star excels star in glory. There's different kinds of stars. You got your blue giant, you got your red stars. Then this statement, this is huge. Verse 42 of 1 Corinthians 15, thus also is the resurrection of the dead. Paul is using things that are common, that we can see every day. Planting seeds. Oh, isn't that cute? The little gardener puts the seed. No, it's profound. It's a miracle. No farmer knows how it happens. They know they have to water it. They know they have to put it in the ground. They know that it needs sun. They know all that stuff. But they have no freaking clue how a seed becomes an ear of corn. No clue how it happens. They just know that it happens. It's the ultimate mystery, the ultimate secret. It's the secret of life. Only God can do it. No one's reproduced it. And these things that we can see, and we look at the sky, we see different glories. We see bright stars, dim stars, planets with rings on them, planets that are red. All these variations, Paul says, thus also is the resurrection of the dead. These simple things are teaching us. It's not like we're clueless. People say to me, oh, Martin, God just has not told us anything. What do you mean he hasn't told us anything? He's shouting to us using the simple examples in nature. Thus also is the resurrection of the dead. It is sown in corruption. It is roused in incorruption. It is sown in dishonor. It is roused in glory. It is sown in infirmity. It is roused in power. It is sown a soulish body. It is roused a spiritual body. If there is a soulish body, there is a spiritual also. If there is a soulish body, if you have a body, if your pet has a body, if there is a soulish body, then there is a corresponding spiritual body. This is how I know that every soul that has a body, which is every soul, has a corresponding spiritual body that will come eventually to that soul after death. That soul, that living soul, whether it's inside of a dog or a cat or an ant or you, that body is sown in corruption, in dishonor, in infirmity. But it is roused in glory. It is roused in power. It is roused in incorruption. Guaranteed. Because if there's a soulless body, there is a spiritual also. Thus it is written, the first human, Adam, became a living soul. The last Adam, a vivifying spirit. Paul's been telling us this all along. He told us this in Romans. That's the whole type thing. It's going from corruption to incorruption, from death to life, from sin to incorruption. It starts with Adam. It finishes with Christ. The first human Adam became a living soul, the last Adam a vivifying spirit. And because of the last Adam, Romans 5, 18 and 19, everyone who was born in the Adam will eventually become a vivifying spirit. They will become a body with a spirit, fulfilled, filled with spirit, a spirit without measure. Jesus Christ on earth had the spirit without measure. We have it in measure. We have the earnest of the inheritance. We have a little seed like this, but that guarantees it. You see, this seed guarantees, if you put this in the ground, you bury it, it's going to become a wildflower. Guaranteed. Guaranteed. That's Adam. Adam is the seed. And what does it produce? A bunch of Adam people, a bunch of dying people, a bunch of people who sin because they're dying. But what is Christ? He's the last Adam. He's not the second Adam. He's the last Adam. We're not going to need another Adam after Christ because he perfects. He changes. He changes it. He changes it from the seed to the wildflower. And that's what he's going to do. He's a vivifying spirit. But not first the spiritual, but the soulish thereupon the spiritual. That's the order of things. I have to end with this because of my time. I want to go on and I could go on. Maybe I should go on. But I will go on the next show, Monday. But this is the inspired order of things. You cannot have it any other way. It's impossible. Why didn't God just give us life first? Why didn't God just bring us incorruption first? Why doesn't God just start us with glory? Why doesn't God start us with immortality? No. Why doesn't God just start the wildflower? Just why the seeds? Why the seeds? It's a lesson. It's all for the experience of contrast. We will never know the thrill of resurrection unless we've tasted death. And man, we are tasting death. But look up at the sky tonight. Look at the glory. Look at the different glories. Better yet, just walk through the grass. Look at a bush, a lilac bush. Look at a tree. And understand that it came from this. Thus also is the resurrection of the dead.